June 11th, 2020. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflower.
And I'm Pam Bedar.
I'm broadcasting today from the Roof Lizard Lounge high atop the Dino Hotel in beautiful Lakewood, Colorado, just 10 minutes away from Red Rocks Amphitheater and the beautiful Rocky Mountains.
Steve, is that Jurassic Park?
Yes, this is Jurassic Hotel. This is Greg Talley's Dino Hotel in Lakewood, Colorado. And boy, am I excited to be in the studio where the Damn Dirty Drive-In gets recorded, the podcast that used to be the MST3K Revival League show. Boy, we're doing a little bit of a cultural exchange today here.
Well, tell me a little bit about this. Are you on a spaceship with a couple of robots watching bad movies?
There is a Tom Servo in the room with me. I'll post pictures later on the Facebook page. But yes, this is an exciting hotel in Colorado, just outside of Denver, where Greg Talley and his friends come to talk about Mystery Science Theater and all sorts of other pop culture icons. And they have a wonderful jingle from Mr. Kevin Murphy that we will play at the end of this show. This is a great place to talk about Sherlock Holmes, I'll tell you that much.
All right, and so Sherlock Holmes is now part of the canon there too. So that's awesome.
Sherlock Holmes goes to Denver. That is the story of the Red Circle, for sure.
Well, and we've seen how Doyle likes to represent Americans, so I think...
Dinosaurs in Denver, they go together. It's a wonderful place. This story starts with a cold opening. That's different.
Yeah, there's no narration from Watson as to the setting. We just jump right in. So Mrs. Warren has come to Holmes about a lodger she has. She's completely unnerved by his presence. He has not left his room in 10 days, but is heard pacing around. To hear his quick step moving here and moving there from early morning to late at night, and yet never to catch so much as a glimpse of him.
So, and Pam, do you think they got the 10,000 steps in?
Sounds like. You can get new steps at home if you need to. Mrs. Warren mentions that Holmes undertook a small task for one of her other lodgers last year. And she says, but he would never cease talking of it. Your kindness, sir, and the way in which you brought light into the darkness. And Holmes is kind of at first like, oh, this doesn't sound like a great case. But when she says that, he's like, all right, I'll take a look. And Watson tells us, Holmes was accessible upon the side of flattery and also, to do him justice, upon the side of kindliness. I kind of love that because we have seen that you can definitely flatter Holmes into doing things. But I like that Watson takes that moment and says, also, he's just a nice guy. And this woman was super upset, so he put aside his work in order to help her.
This is where the quote comes, flattery gets you everywhere.
Right. Exactly.
But Doyle adds that other piece, that kindliness piece. This is definitely humanizing Holmes to a degree that we haven't seen before. We've heard where he has this gentler side, but this is a real example of kindness turning his heart. And once again, we hear about how Holmes has a way with women that is different from other characters. The quote says, Holmes leaned forward and laid his long, thin fingers upon the woman's shoulder. He had an almost hypnotic power of soothing when he wished. The scared look faded from her eyes, and her agitated features smoothed into their usual commonplace. She sat down in the chair which he had indicated. This is a human being, way more than we have had in previous stories.
And just, you can think about what a confident figure has an impact over people who are under distress. The ability of recognizing that Holmes is there, he could solve my challenges is really what I'm thinking, reading into this.
Well, and I think it's important too that he doesn't just say, take a seat, I will take care of this problem. He actually touches her shoulder. And you know, we have so much research now on the power of touch. And of course, there's a ton of work right now during the pandemic on, you know, what about the fact that a lot of people are not getting enough physical contact with others, especially the approximately one third of people who live alone? And so I do think it's like an important insight into Holmes that he realizes how upset she is. And you don't think of Holmes as a big hugger, right? But he actually touches her shoulder And that's an important part, I think, of putting her at ease.
He says, bring it in. Let me get some sugar. Mm-mm-mm.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah, no, that's not what happens.
The situation that she's bringing is pretty interesting. This is a weird case. And of course, Holmes loves the weird case.
Well, and at first it feels slightly funny, you know, like, okay, so you got a lodger who like doesn't come out a lot, like whatever, you know, this is like someone, an introvert, I don't know. It's mysterious, but almost seems in a sort of silly way, maybe reminding me of the Red-Headed League at first, like this kind of funny situation. And I like how Holmes frames it. He's like, I think we might have a lodger substitution, but then it gets really dark. And, you know, as I've said before on this podcast, that's one of the things I really love about the Holmes short stories that I think does explain their appeal. There's that mixture of pathos and humor. You kind of, as a reader, you sort of get manipulated into thinking, oh, that's kind of funny. And then, oh, there's something really bad going on here.
Well, and that is the interesting part about Mrs. Warren. She doesn't go to the police. She goes to the detective. And, you know, I just have this strange lodger. I don't get to see him very much. Certainly doesn't sound, it sounds odd, but not like criminal. I need to hire a detective odd. But right. As it goes through, here we are. We're at a mystery.
Yeah, it is mysterious. There is a mystery to be had here. But yeah, it doesn't seem to warrant going to a detective. I agree with you.
And that's why she goes to Holmes, who helped her lodger with a little problem. They don't say what the little problem was a year ago, but it sounds like that too might not have been a crime, but just a problem, which is what you can go to Sherlock for when you wouldn't go to the police. So,
if you got a problem, yo, I'll solve it. Check out the beat. Mm-hmm. DJ revolves it. No, sorry.
That sounds like you should put that down as a record, Steve.
As somebody else. That's not Sherlock Holmes. So Sherlock Holmes, of course, is right. The lodger is actually a different person from the person who walked in initially. And it turns out it's a beautiful young woman and she's in some kind of terrible danger.
Da, da, da.
We've seen this before. Holmes and Watson like to save damsels in distress. And it's actually kind of cool how they set up, like Mrs. Warren does a really nice job of setting up a mirror so that they can hide and try to see the lodger as they're thinking, but it turns out she picks up her meal. And so crouching together in the angle of the door, we kept our eyes fixed upon the mirror. Suddenly, as the landlady's footsteps died away, there was a creak of a turning key. The handle revolved, and two thin hands darted out and lifted the tray from the chair. An instant later, it was hurriedly replaced, and I caught a glimpse of a dark, beautiful, horrified face glaring at the narrow opening of the box room. So that's good. Wonderful.
This is really good.
It's really good, right?
That's where the organ music just gets a little bit louder.
Well, and I do like that notion. You know, it's always interesting when you have a mirror. So like that perspective of you're not looking straight at someone, you're looking at someone's reflection in a mirror. And like, what does that mean? Like the detective gaze is sort of filtered through the technology of the mirror. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's like practically that's how they're able to see, but also she can't quite see them back, but she can see that someone has seen her.
They speculate that she is a foreign woman, that she maybe doesn't have English as her first language, because every communication that she's had with the landlady, she has printed with a pencil on paper instead of handwriting. Children, let me explain. Handwriting, cursive script, is somehow different writing, and it conveys a different meaning than printing clumsily. Holmes remarks, this is certainly a little unusual. Seclusion, I can understand, but why print? Printing is a clumsy process. Why not write? What would it suggest, Watson? And he goes on to say that this is somebody who maybe doesn't understand the English words that she, as it turns out, needs to communicate, and maybe she's looking them up in a dictionary and copying them down from a dictionary.
Match.
match instead of matches.
But then, of course, it turns out that one of the reasons she might be printing is to disguise the fact that she's a woman, which, as we discussed a couple episodes ago, in Victorian handwriting, men and women were taught quite different forms of handwriting. So, in fact, you could tell the gender of a writer quite easily from their script. And so this comes up again, something which I think today we really, well, which studies have shown, we're not so fantastic about telling people's gender from their handwriting in the 21st century.
And it was legible at that time. It wasn't just chicken scratch.
Yes, exactly.
Holmes takes down the big book in which day by day he filed the agony columns of the various London journals. But wait a minute. He takes down this giant book where he's been keeping track of all the personal ads from the local newspapers, and he finds this personal column that is signed with the letter G day after day that has this very clear conversation. Wouldn't he have noted that very clear conversation before this case came up?
State, he's not the Google.
What's the point of keeping all these articles if he's not actually making, you know, evidence out of them?
Well, what are you
for exactly
for?
This purpose, Steve? Can you argue with his results?
Yeah, well, what are you looking for? They're just they're until you get something giving you some directions, they're just random ads, I guess.
I guess. But he goes through the random ads that aren't applicable to this case and dismisses all of them and then goes, aha, here's something. It's like, really? You didn't have that ready in all of your scouring of these personal ads? Okay, whatever. I'll disregard that particular detail.
I would also make a note, that's another place where we get a little bit of humor, right? Is when he starts reading to us from the personal ads. And I think that, you know, as 21st century readers, we don't really have that feeling of what these personal ads included, but certainly they are somewhat funny, you know, as he goes through them. For example, he says, here are the Daily Gazette extracts of the last fortnight. Lady with a black boa at Prince's Skating Club. That we may pass. Surely Jimmy will not break his mother's heart. That appears to be irrelevant. If the lady who fainted in the Brixton bus, she does not interest me. And so it's just, he goes through this whole list.
I love the she does not interest me. Like I know that story. She's not interesting.
Right? And so there's just this notion, which I think Doyle does so well, of like all the little lives in London, that all the people who are going about, you know, falling in love on the bus with the girl who fainted, or, you know, losing a boa, whatever. All of these people are going about their lives. And then we just get this tiny glimpse into someone's life, this beautiful girl who's probably terrified and hanging out in Mrs. Warren's lodging. And, you know, that's fiction, that's art, that's detection, is like going close to this little moment. But there are all these other stories out there that we're not reading at this time. So I love the personal ads. I love Holmes's big book.
Okay, fine. Mrs. Warren returns to report that her husband, Mr. Warren, was taken for a ride by somebody who put a coat over his head and dumped him into a cab, and then quickly they dumped him back out onto the side of the road. Holmes believes that this is clearly a case of mistaken identity, and these kidnappers were clearly trying to nab the lodger. This is finally getting to some intrigue in this mystery.
Yeah. And I was really curious by this exchange that follows on that. And I don't know if this struck you guys as odd, but at a certain point, Watson turns to Holmes and he says, why should you go further in it? What have you to gain from it? What indeed, says Holmes. It is art for art's sake, Watson. I suppose when you doctored, you found yourself studying cases without thought of a fee. For my education, Holmes. Education never ends, Watson. It is a series of lessons with the greatest for the last. This is an instructive case. There is neither money nor credit in it. And yet, one would wish to tidy it up. When dusk comes, we should find ourselves one stage advanced in our investigation. And so there's several things to think about from that little dialogue. The first thing that struck me is, I feel like Watson, come on, buddy. They're helping somebody out. You like helping people. You know, I was kind of surprised that he was like, why do you want to go further on this case?
I think that's a valid question. And obviously, Sherlock is answering that. I do it because I love the adventure. The art that I've created is in the sense that I have created this profession, and this is why we do it. It's fun. I can learn something from it. It interests me. It could be any number of things that kind of fill them up. And, you know, it's not just about earning the living. The living comes from doing something you enjoy so much.
You mean podcasting is not for the money?
Steve, I'm looking for my Spotify deal. And when we get it, you know, maybe we can come against, was it Rogan? We'll come after him.
We can maybe build a studio like we have at the Dinosaur Hotel, I'll tell you that much. Where my money's going, right here.
And all of a sudden, Pam will go, yeah, and I want that too. And we're like, all right.
Have to empty another closet. This is, again, Doyle talking about the work is its own reward. This is, once again, making Holmes the good guy in the story. He's going to do this for the good. But yeah, you're right. This is a little bit weird that Watson is the one who's questioning Holmes's motive here. Why are you taking this case? This seems like a waste of your time. That's weird.
You can help a damsel in distress. You're gonna do it, right?
Exactly.
And that really is different from Watson's normal. Normally, mm-hmm. Watson would be the helpful one, the one who wants to help and is convincing Holmes to help. But this is a little bit of role reversal. You're right.
But you absolutely could imagine this in your personal careers. You know, someone comes to you and they have specific questions about something that you have a lot of knowledge about. Well, you're apt to, you know, unless something was preventing you from doing that, you're likely to help them the best you can.
Every day of my life, Chip, that is what happens in my day. People come to me.
Ask for Steve.
Yes, that's askforsteve.com. Thank you very much for that plug. We get to a code finally in this mystery. I love codes. And we find from the personal ads how we're going to spell words using numbers of flashing lights from a certain hidden place. And Holmes and Watson, of course, discover the hidden place and they see the code.
Now, this was really funny for me because I was listening to the audiobook. And as they were spelling it out, attenta, which is A-T-T-E-N-T-A, T means assassination in French. And I was like, oh, they're saying assassination in French. But no, that wasn't.
Oh, my.
She's way too smart for this show.
French is the language of diplomacy. We need the language of passion here. We need...
Yes. Right? So that language is Italian, right?
Use your hands when you say Italian, Steve. Italian.
So attenta in Italian means beware, and the letter A at the end refers to a female person in this conversation. Dun dun dun.
Oh no.
And pericolo, which sounds awesome.
Yeah, it
means
does.
Danger.
And then that word danger is spelled a second time, but it's cut off. Something happens. The code is lost. And that's pretty much where we end the story, or at least this part of the story, right?
Yeah, I don't know how this is a two-part story. This is a two-part story, mm-hmm. but there's no break. It just feels like you should just keep going. And but anyway, it stopped, and we'll have to come back tomorrow to figure out how this ends.
We don't get a satisfying ending on this one, right, Pam?
Well, let's just look at the ending, though, quickly, because it's an ending. We should always pause at endings. So as they're watching, the same thought occurred on the instant to us both. Holmes sprang up where he was crouched by the window. "This is serious, Watson," he cried. "There is some devilry going forward. Why should such a message stop in such a way? I should put Scotland Yard in touch with this business. And yet it is too pressing for us to leave. Shall I go for the police? We must define the situation a little more clearly. It may bear some more innocent interpretation. Come, Watson, let us go across ourselves and see what we can make of it." So I think this is kind of an interesting moment because they're realizing, like, yeah, if someone cuts you off while you're yelling danger, even if you're typing it out in code, probably not a good sign. But then they're not quite sure whether it's a matter for the police or not. right? And so, and I feel like that's, that comes like right out of the Gothic tradition of like people who are in danger, not knowing whether they need help or not. Hmm. And we haven't seen Watson and Holmes in that position before.
Hmm.
I don't think Watson has grabbed his revolver on this trip over to Mrs. Warren's house to get a glimpse of the lodger, you know. They're just running out there, seeing what the danger is. And, you know, there's like foreign codes and this terrified, beautiful woman. I mean, it's kind of a great moment to stop the story for a minute.
Okay, fine. You've convinced me. This is like our own little cliffhanger. We're going to have to wait till tomorrow to find out what happens next in this story. And maybe even discover a red circle in the mystery of the red circle, huh?
Ha!
I'd be fine with that.
The title, the titular red circle has yet to be discovered.
No, let's make it fancy. The eponymous red circle.
Ah! You and your big words.
All right, we'll have to look that up now.
I hope everybody's enjoying this. I hope everyone's having fun wherever you are. Denver is lovely this time of year, I'll tell you that much. Come back tomorrow. We will continue the adventure of the Red Circle. If you have any questions or comments, we would love to hear from you. Send us a voicemail, send us an email, and follow our hashtag TMS Sherlock Holmes for all of the feedback from around the world. Go to our dedicated website, sandwichesatirregularhours.com, for all of these Sherlock Holmes conversations that we've put all together in one place. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Jeff Goldblum.
And I'm Pam Vidar.
Roll that jingle.
The next time you travel to Denver, make your journey into one that you'll remember. Don't just sit around and wish when you can have an expedition at the Dino. Oh.